Good morning, Marty. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? I'm great.
Great. I'm great. Well, thank you for taking out so early on a Sunday morning to join us. So there's been a lot going on during this month that you're heavily involved with regarding the sustainability Wine Growing Australia and your own role, obviously, as General Manager of the Australian Wine Research Institute. How about we just quickly kick off with how you actually got to where you are. Let's have a little bit of a story before we get into the nitty-gritty.
Sure. So I started in the wine industry in the early 1990s. And for those of us who have been around a little while in the wine industry, things were booming then. My family put their first patch of vines in the 1990s. So that was down in Padthaway in the Limestone Coast in South Australia. So that's where I come from. So I had to help my family for a couple of years. And it was only after working in the vines, I did a lot of the, you know, really hard grunt work, planting vines, you know, knocking posts, throwing posts, all those kinds of jobs, that I realised that there was probably a little bit more of a career for me in the wine industry, not just, you know, working in the vineyard. So I took myself off to university. I went to uni in Adelaide, at the University of Adelaide, and I did my degree in viticulture. After finishing my degree, there were plenty of jobs around. I got a job pretty quickly. I went back down to Coonawarra and worked in a vineyard down there at Catnook Estate. A well-known one down there. Spent a couple of years there and spent a few years working around different vineyards in technical type roles. After a few years of that, I went back to the university. I did a master's in viticulture, loved it so much that I ended up doing a PhD. And during those few years at the university, I spent quite a bit of time lecturing in viticulture, doing a lot of practical sessions out in the vineyard with students. So I really loved that as well. And I loved that being able to work with younger people, especially moving into the wine industry. I took myself overseas for a year. So I was in the States for about a year in probably not where you'd expect a viticulturist to go, not California.
Is it where?
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Good ham.
So on the east coast of the States, which, you know, was an amazing learning experience across there because, you know, the climate there was, you know, quite different to anything I'd ever experienced before. Mm. It's a bit of a contrast, a bit of a combination perhaps between Hunter Valley in the summer, so hot and wet, and then freezing cold in the winter, so colder than probably what's experienced in Tasmania. But anyway, came back from the States and did a bit of consulting work. And then I came to the AWRI, so the Australian Wine Research Institute, and I've been there for about 13 years in a number of different roles. But so now I'm one of a number of general managers, and I look after the industry development support and sustainability teams.
Wow. Okay. So 13 years there. So you really know your stuff. That's great. Could I just ask, what role did you start in?
I started as a viticulturist. That's my training. And then I moved through the ranks, I guess, as a viticulturist and senior viticulturist. Then I moved across a few years ago. I guess it kind of coincided with this interest by our wine industry in sustainability. And I started doing more work in the sustainability and climate change areas. So we did actually form a new group that was really focused on sustainability. So I've probably been working more closely in sustainability for the last 10 years or so.
Okay, well, then that leads us beautifully into what we're going to be talking about today, of course. So the recent report came out, I think it was around the 9th of May. I've had a good read of it. And, you know, some of our listeners probably have, especially that we're actually working in the industry. Can you give us some of the highlights? I think this is the third report that's come out, yeah? Let's just touch on the highlights of this year, and then we'll do a bit of a comparison as the previous 2 years. I think that would be interesting.
Sure. I think one of the highlights and the one that we want to scream from the rooftops is just how much progress we have made in the last few years. Not only have we had a huge increase in the number of members, so the number of members has quadrupled, I believe, which has been amazing for us sitting at the other end of that and watching all these names come through as members. But then more than 50% has actually gone through the process and gone from being a member to becoming a certified member. And that for them is it's a lot of work. It's a lot of commitment, a lot of dedication. And it's, you know, I feel an immense sense of pride at just seeing these names come, you know, from when they first kind of come in the door and then to see their certificates come through to say, yep, not only have I made this commitment, I have gone through an audit and become certified.
Well, it's very rewarding work for you. And I know our listeners can't see the smile on your face, but I certainly can. So good for you. So why is it now, why is it so important to be, you know, I guess, accredited as sustainable and recognised?
There's a number of reasons. And when we think about or talk to growers especially, because there are more growers than there are winemakers, we ask them, you know, what are you doing here? What's your driver for becoming certified in sustainability? And I think probably the number one thing that not everyone can articulate it in the very beginning, but often the number one thing that people say is, well, ultimately it's just the right thing to do. We should be doing this for our businesses. It makes good business sense. And then it moves into there's a business imperative for us to become certified. So not only is it good for our business, in fact, we need it to continue trading. Many of our markets are now asking for it. And this really speaks to the global acknowledgement that sustainability is critical for all of us. You know, it's good for our businesses, good for the planet, and those marketplaces are asking for it as well.
For sure. So this is actually, I think we've been calling it a trust mark as opposed to like a trademark. So this trust mark, does that give us an advantage in international markets? I mean, that's very topical for the Australian wine industry. Are we seeing that?
Yeah, and it is a trademark. So this is a trademark that is registered here in Australia, and it's registered in a number of our international markets, and that is really important. But we do refer to it as the trust mark because I think what it symbolises is that people can trust it, and when they see the trust mark, they can understand that the producers of the wine have been through quite a rigorous process of you know, an auditor comes into their vineyards and wineries and actually looks at all of their processes and goes through that quite a, you know, strenuous process. So yeah, the trust mark, the international markets, they are starting to recognise it. I think probably the ones that we're working closest with are the Nordic markets, and that's because they have a strong history in the Nordics of, they're kind of right at the leading edge of recognising sustainability credentials.
Yes.
So if I can maybe go back a little bit, with the Nordic markets, many of those Nordic markets have a monopoly on alcohol sales. So in Sweden, for example, it's Systembolaget. And Systembolaget, that because they're a monopoly and they're a government monopoly, they have a lot of power to really tell their consumers what they should be drinking.
Yes.
And they use
and
that
when
power.
And when you can buy. Don't open on Sundays, for example. It's a, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Sweden. Sorry, please carry on.
Yes. Yeah, but they have taken this position that sustainability is really, really important for anyone who drinks alcohol. You know, it's like the baseline criteria to enter that market. So, you know, recognising this and knowing that they had these, you know, strenuous, requirements for anyone entering that market, we have worked closely with them to make sure that they understand our program and what we require growers and winemakers to do to get through it. And then they give us feedback along the way. And I guess, yeah, because we have spent quite a bit of time with them, they understand the program. And now when they put out tenders for wine, that is one of the things that they're asking for, that the wines have the trust mark on it.
So is that a prerequisite or is it just a preferred?
For many, many of the tenders that are coming out now, it is a prerequisite.
Okay, yeah. So it really is just one way. So you guys are going to really, you know, you're going to become huge over the next, you know, 5 years or so if everyone needs to jump on this bandwagon. So how many members do you have and how many accredited people now?
So there's more than 1,400 members now and more than, I think it's 51% of them are certified.
Yep, okay, that's great. So I guess if we can just sort of go back just a little bit, and a lot of people know this, but I think it'd be really important to hear it from you. What's involved in actually making sustainable wine?
So in terms of the membership, so and every member and anyone could, people can start at different levels of this. So to join up and become a member, all that they're doing is reporting annually on some of their, I guess, typical business metrics, and we call them their sustainability metrics. So it's really about their production data, so how many tonnes of grapes are they growing and processing in the wineries, how big the vineyard is, and then their resource use data. So again, telling us how much water they use, how much energy they use, how much waste they produce, what they're contributing to biodiversity, and they go through and they basically report through that data to us. So that's the first step. And then those who take on that bigger commitment to become certified, they go through a training day where we give them all the resources and information on the standards. So we have two independent standards that we work with. So they're held by Fresh Care, which is an independent organisation. And then essentially they have to prepare themselves to make sure they've got everything in their vineyards and wineries ready to go so that they can pass an audit. Mm-hmm. So when they're ready, they bring an auditor in and the auditor goes through the standard and they need to make sure that they've done everything that's laid out in that standard. And that covers all of those sustainability areas like, you know, water use, energy use, biodiversity, waste, all of those things.
Sure. So, I mean, it's quite a rigorous process, but I guess it has to be. And I guess once you're accredited for life. Or is it like it's an ongoing, like every year you will need to be able to prove you're still doing, you know, everything that needs to be done? Like how rigorous is that auditing process going to be ongoing?
Yeah. So each member, once they're certified, they only have to have an audit done once every 3 years. And then just in the interim years, they report through to us their data so that we can see that they're still involved in the program and they're doing an internal audit that comes through to us as well.
Sure. Okay. So when I was reading the report, something that I found really interesting was that based on a survey of wine drinkers globally, 50% only believe a wine is sustainable if it has an official certification. And you know, that's a large amount of skepticism. Where's the skepticism coming from?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, but I think what we're recognising is that consumers are becoming more aware of sustainability. And I don't think that necessarily means that they understand what sustainability is, but they're starting to recognise it.
They know it's a good thing. They know it's something that they should jump on board. Sure.
Right. And we know that from ourselves. When you go into the supermarket, there's all kinds of green labelling out there on the supermarket shelves every week when you go shopping. So it's there, and obviously supermarkets are kind of leveraging this. That they see that, you know, consumers are recognising it, so they're using it, and all kinds of companies, including wine companies, are also now starting to use it in their marketing. So there's this consumer perception building around what it is, and using something like our trust mark, I guess they can look at it and understand that, you know, we use it to make their decision easier. So it's there and they can make a choice if they can see that trust mark. But for them, being able to see it and recognise it as something that represents a sustainable product, I guess that's what they're looking for.
And how do you see that affecting the price of a bottle from a consumer perspective? I mean, are we, let's compare it to, say, organic. You know, similar but different. You know, people pay more for organic because of the process that's involved and the quality that they issue and that they're receiving. So from the sustainable side of it, is it similar?
At the moment, no. I think it's more of what we're seeing internationally is that this is almost like it's a cost of business to be in the market. It's becoming more and more of a market access issue that if you don't have it, you know, within a few years, it will be impossible to have your wines on the shelf. So whether or not that translates to a price difference, I'm really not sure at the moment.
Well, that's good. That's good that if it doesn't, because, you know, a lot of people do have issues around the not just small difference in price, but, you know, the high difference of price between organic and not organic. And, of course, we all know that organic, you're paying that price because it has some form of, you know, certification on it, labelling on the packaging. But there's also a lot of organic process that goes on without them actually having been accredited organic, because it's a very expensive thing to go through. My father was an agriculturalist, a farmer, and our whole process was completely, you know, it was grass-fed. There were no pesticides. It was actually as organic as you could possibly do. In order to go through the process to be certified organic was very expensive, and I guess Dad didn't actually think it was that necessary for him. So anyway, that's just it's interesting. It is interesting. Ultimately, does a wine being made sustainably make the wine taste better? I mean, it actually has nothing to do with the actual wine, does it? Like it doesn't, but it almost sounds like it should, or something. Like it sounds like it should have some form of impact. Do you get people asking you that?
You know what? I've never been asked that before. No.
But
I think with all of the growers and winemakers that I talk to, the ones that have jumped on board first, let's call them the early adopters, they are the ones that are there because they truly see the value in this, and they are the ones that look more carefully at their businesses. So they are very astute business people, and my history tells me that those who are astute business people are also the ones out there in the vineyard. They take more care, and in the winery, they are more connected to their products. So
And that translates to the wine then. So I think that's, thank you. You saw where I was going with that. So you just mentioned early adopters. Who are some of the early adopters?
Oh, look, I think one of the standouts has got to be Yulumba. Yulumba got on board very early with this. Not only, you know, they did their own vineyard sites and wineries first, and then they gave a lot of support to their grower base and helped them to become certified as well. So they were, I guess, one of the first larger companies that jumped on board, had 100% of their supply, you know, as certified members, so that they're now using the trust mark on all of their products.
Right. Okay. They're rather pioneers in a lot of areas. Thank God for Viognier.
if I can just say, I heard you say you've got Jeremy Scarborough on the show later on. They are also certified, so you better ask him about his credentials.
I certainly will be. He's actually coming up next, and that's definitely something I'm going to be asking him. So you did mention a little earlier it's the third report. What are the main differences that you've seen over the last 3 years? Because it is changing so quickly, I'm assuming there are some pretty big milestones there.
I think as an industry, we do have our minds quite focused on energy and energy as it relates to climate change. We talk about energy in terms of our fuel use and our electricity use because that translates into greenhouse gas emissions. So I think all members are reporting their numbers. So all members have an account of their scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. So that's their direct emissions that they can be responsible for. And I think because when we released as an industry the emissions reduction roadmap last year, we're very focused on that and we have looked at our data and we've done a baseline for our emissions for our industry and we'll be reporting on that in a couple of years' time to see whether we have made progress. So that's something that I think we're very focused on. The other areas, look, I don't know if there's any standouts. I think it's, for me, it's really nice to see people tracking their data because, you know, sometimes they don't know the areas that they need to focus on or the areas that they, you know, need to improve on. It's only once they start tracking their data and start tracking their data over time, and we provide benchmarking reports so that they can see how their performance compares to everybody else. And once they see where they are in the lineup, it's easier for them to see, look, these are some areas we're not doing so well in. These are the ones that we need to make an improvement on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And I guess, you know, again, over the next 5 years, the changes are going to be like exponential. You mentioned much earlier, you know, there are obviously more growers than winemakers. And that, of course, makes a lot of sense. I don't think a lot of people think of it specifically in those sort of terms. Do you have some percentages around how many growers versus winemakers?
Well, I think if you think about even nationally, the numbers that we usually draw on is that there's 6,000 growers in Australia and 2,000 wineries. So that's the difference. And then in our program, the percentages are roughly the same. So,
So what are you hoping to see over the next, you know, however few years that you remain in your position? What would you like to see, apart from the obvious, getting more people on board, converting them into members and seeing the accreditation really go through the roof? Where else would you like to see the world of sustainability go?
Yeah, I think mentioning before about energy and looking at our greenhouse gas emissions, I think we need to really be talking about this and making a bit more of a song and dance about what we're doing as an industry. I think for a long time, and I do quite a bit of work with other agricultural sectors as well, and many of those are only just starting this sustainability journey. So we've been doing this for a long time. Nationally, we had a program in 2009. So we really are, I guess, like that lighthouse industry. And I think we should make a bit more of that and really tell the market what we're doing. I think there's, you know, huge, we are working really well together as an industry. And I think we need to translate that into, you know, as an industry, really using these credentials to tell our story a bit better, not just nationally, but at the regional level as well.
And how would you be doing that?
I think we can talk about the national stories and the national data that we have, but I think the ones that resonate most are those that are told at the regional level. So regions also have access to this data so they can aggregate their data and then pull out the data just like an individual member would do and go, right, what are the areas that we're doing best? You know, for example, if I'm in the Yarra Valley, what are we doing in the Yarra Valley that stands out across all of those indicators that we use? You know, perhaps it's our land and soil management. What's the story that we can tell as a region about how we do that the best? Okay.
We'll definitely see what happens over the next few years. Now, just before we round up, we've got a couple of minutes left. A little bit of fun stuff. Well, you're obviously a wine drinker, I would assume. Actually, I probably shouldn't assume that these days. You never know. What are some of your favorite varietals?
Favorite varieties. I love Shiraz, and coming from Padua in the Limestone Coast, it's quite well known for its Shiraz. So I do enjoy that. But I also enjoy, well, I'd call them alternative varieties, but they're almost not alternative anymore. I love Fiano like everybody else loves Fiano. I love Montepulciano. They're probably the ones that stand out for me.
Yes, okay. And from where, I mean, you're a South Australian, born and bred, you're still there. Are your favourite varietals? I mean, we know Fiano, where it grows so well, McLaren Vale, etc. But do you have some specific regions that are your favourites?
I can't go past my home region of Padua.
I was expecting that.
And other than that, no, I'm very, very agnostic in the role that I'm in. I'm working for all 65 regions, so no, they're all my favourites.
So, what I do love speaking to people about is these varietals that we do actually still sometimes say alternate, but we're actually now just beginning to say, just new, different. The emergence of them in the markets and the people just wanting them on the basis of, obviously changing consumer tastes and people wanting fresh and ready to go sort of wines. Is that something that you're also seeing? I mean, understand the conversation of what you work with behind is all about sustainability and the research. But on the more, because you are a viticulturist as well, on the more, on the actual wine making side of things, like, do you get involved in that sort of thing?
Personally, I don't get very involved, no, but at the Australian Wine Research Institute, absolutely. That's where a lot of the people who work there are working at. Well, first of all, we work at the interface between the vineyard and winery, doing quite a bit of research. And then we have a whole team on my team, a number of actual practical winemakers who help out with lots of things in wineries.
Right. Well, look, thank you so much. We've just rounded out our interview, and I know you asked me to call you Marty, but Dr. Marty Longbottom, thank you so much for joining us on the Wine Show Australia. Really fascinating information, and it's just going to be something I look forward to watching, and definitely get you back on in, say, 12 months' time, and after the report comes out next May, and let's see where you're at.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you.